We've been talking about Acts 3, the healing of the lame man. We got to the point last time where he was healed. I do want to, because I think it's helpful, I do want to pick up some teachings about benevolence. We talked about that a few weeks ago. There are, though, as we look at Acts 3, some specific items that we can mention and point out and I think profit from when it comes to benevolence. I was in a position yesterday around noon. I was out and about, and I backed into a parking spot. About four parking spots away from me, there was another fella sitting in his car, and there was somebody talking to him at the window. And I thought, I have a pretty good idea what's going on there. And as soon as I get out of the truck, that fella's probably going to make a visit to me. Well, that is exactly what happened. There was this fella, he had a backpack on, and at the bottom of the backpack, there was a tent. So sure enough, as soon as I opened my door, he took the necessary steps and got over there and said, "Excuse me, sir." Mm-hmm. So I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, you know, I'm from Florida and I need to sell my tent and, you know, I have some issues." And I thought, well, good. You've been teaching on that and now you get to try to put that into practice. And let's see how well you do, preacher. But he was not the easiest guy to deal with. And as I went about my business, I didn't have any immediate reaction for him. The fellow in the car said, "There's the Play It Again sports place over there, and you should go talk to them and see if they can buy your tent. So that will give you some money." But that probably wasn't going to help him for very long. And I thought, based on the little information he gave me, I really don't have a real good answer. So I thought, I will go inside and do what needs done here. And if he is still there, I did look for him when I came out. I had some better ideas at that time. But I tell you that to let you know that, and Virginia mentioned this a few weeks back, sometimes when you are hit up like that, some cases are pretty easy. You know, it may be an immediate yes, maybe an immediate no, or you have an immediate answer. And there are some other cases that you almost need the wisdom of Solomon on. You're thinking, how can I help this person? Should I help this person? And it's very difficult. So even for a person who has dealt with benevolent requests for many years, I'm not saying that that's necessarily true of me, but if you have done that as a preacher, as an elder, or maybe you've had some job, there are just some cases where if you don't get it right, it's very, very difficult. Thinking about that in terms of Acts chapter 3, the healing of the lame man, we do have several principles here. One principle is that Peter and John, Acts chapter 3, verse 4, they looked at this man. And that word which is translated look in Acts 3, verse 4 doesn't mean a quick glance. It means that they had eye contact, that there was an ongoing look. They looked intently at him. I want to show you a couple of the places where this word is used in the New Testament so you can get a better sense of it. Luke chapter 22, verse 56, that's one cross-reference we'd like to have run. And then let's also take a look at Acts chapter 3, verse 12. Luke 22, verse 56, who'd like to be our helper for that one? Luke 22, 56. All right, Don. And then we'll also have somebody read from Acts 3, verse 12. Acts 3, 12, who wants that one? Lois, thank you. All right, Don, when you're ready. Luke chapter 22, the 56th verse.
"But a certain maid beheld him as he sat by the fire and earnestly looked upon him and said, this man was also with him."
Okay. Jesus has been arrested. There's this maid at the fire, and she wants to identify Peter. If you're going to make, you've seen probably, maybe in a movie, Criminal Lineup. If you're going to identify somebody, how sure do you want to be before you say, that's the guy? You want to be pretty positive. So she makes this identification, but she looks carefully. She looks intently. She looks very closely at Peter and then says, you were with him. All right, Acts chapter 3, verse 12.
"But when Peter saw this, he replied to the people, men of Israel, why do you marvel at this? Or why do you gaze at us as if by our own power or piety we had made him walk?"
Okay, thank you. We also have the word translated there as well. Why fasten ye your eyes on us? That's how the ASV translates that. So it is the same idea there. So when you're dealing with people who have that kind of request, always good to pay attention to them. And then the second thing I think that we would want to extract from here is that you want to carefully consider what they are asking. You think there are times where people may ask for something and they really don't know what they need or they really don't understand what they're asking? Yeah. I'm thinking about the guy in terms of yesterday. His attention was focused on that day. Now, had I been in his shoes, my focus would have also probably been on that day. But after that day passes, I mean, we've moved now 24 hours or close to that past that time. And do you think his needs are still going to be the same today? You're on the move. So, you know, we want to hopefully get you into a situation where we can move you past just day-by-day existence. And we can help you get into a routine where you can have the things that you need. And sometimes that's just not how people think and that's not how they live. But that is important. One source said, our giving ought to provide for necessities, not subsidized luxuries. And that can also be a challenge. As you're talking to people, we've mentioned this, that may have been part of a class a few weeks ago when we were discussing benevolence from a different perspective. People sometimes say, well, I've got to have my cable TV and I've got to have this, that, and the other thing. Well, now, wait a minute. Those things are not necessary for day-to-day living. We want to make sure that you have the necessities of life. And when it comes to luxuries, those are some things that need to be trimmed and cut. We do have limited resources, and we want to be wary of squandering those. What about when you, and we'll deal with this a little later as well, you think some needs are ever strategic when you're having to make choices? You have to make some strategic decisions? What about around the house? I think everybody could probably fix some things up around the house. And if you had unlimited money, you could probably, you know, have the house exactly as you want. But do you have to make some strategic decisions sometimes when it comes to your house? Yeah. What might some of them be? Okay. We're probably not going to live in a cooler and ice. So strategic decision, we might have wanted to repaint this room. We might have wanted to do an upgrade over here. But the fridge has also gone out. So the fridge is going to be the strategic choice versus repainting or, you know, trying to revamp this area. And sometimes we have to make those decisions when it comes to benevolence as well. I do want to run a couple of the passages here because when we think about benevolence or people who have needs, it is a divinely authorized activity. Let's take a look at Mark 10. We'll look at Mark 10, verse 21, and also Luke chapter 14, verse 13. Mark 10, 21. Who wants to run over there and take care of that in a minute? Mark 10, 21, Betty. And then from Luke chapter 14, verse 13, who wants to be responsible for that one? Luke 14, verse 13. Kitty? Let's go back to Mark 10. Mark 10, verse 21.
Looking at him, Jesus felt a love for him and said to him, one thing you lack, go and sell all you possess and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Follow me.
Okay, I think we generally remember that Jesus talked to this fellow and said, sell all you have, and he didn't want to do that. But maybe the rest of the verse is where we become a little more forgetful. He said, you sell your stuff and then do what with the money? Put it in the bank? No, give it to the poor. Did the Lord believe that helping the poor is right? Yes, he did. So no question about that. If we're his people, the poor also deserve some attention. Luke chapter 14, verse 13. Let's see what we find there. Kitty, Luke 14, verse 13. Okay. This is contrary to how the world thinks. When the world has a party, who do they want to invite? All your friends. And perhaps the friends that you have who can reciprocate. At least it's often done that way, maybe not so much by Christians, but certainly by others. There's another passage that's well known, Galatians 6:10. As we have opportunity, let us work that which is good to whom? To all men, especially to Christians, but all people. We can offer some assistance with. So that's what we see in Acts chapter 3, verse 6. We also, as we think about benevolence here, a lot of times when people come, they're looking for cash, finances. But as you see in Acts chapter 3, verse 6, that may not take the form of finances. It might take the form of, well, I'll let you fill in the blank. How might benevolence work out? Not money, but it turns out to be something that we help with in terms of, all right, food, groceries. And that could take a couple of different forms, couldn't it? We might say, you need a hot meal. We're either going to cook you one, we're going to provide you one. Or if it's just you're struggling with groceries, we can give you some groceries and you can do the cooking because you have a stove and a refrigerator store and those kinds of things. What other form might benevolence take? Helping people. All right. Person needs a place to stay. So we might have an extra room or we might be able to put them up in a place for a period of time. What else might it involve? Benevolence. Okay. All right. Maybe sit with them. Help with some medicine. Maybe a doctor bill. What else? All right. Clothing, I think that... Okay, I thought somebody said clothing. Possessions. Clothing could be part of that, but that wouldn't exclusively be possessions. What else?
Sometimes I just need to travel with your...
Sure. Transportation. I need to get to a job interview. Or I'm, you know, maybe need help with a car or bus fare or taxi, whatever that might be. So that certainly would be another form of that. Anything else? What about actually helping them with a job contact? You know, you need some things, but we can't continue to help you for the next 10 years. So we want to give you some tools. And maybe that would include a job lead. So you're able. So when we think about benevolence, a lot of times a person is thinking, just give me, you know, $10, $25, $100, whatever it might be, and then, you know, we're off. But we can try to make that a more long-term approach, and that's what we see in Acts chapter 3. Carol?
Well, I was just going to say that sometimes all people need is a listening ear, somebody to...
That's true. That is true. One of the principles... that as we think about benevolence, that I think is really helpful, and this is something that's almost never mentioned. Remember back there in the Old Testament, Ten Commandments? What did God say in conjunction with the Sabbath day? 6 days thou shalt, or labor, but yes, 6 days thou shalt work, 6 days thou shalt labor, and on day seven, what do? You rest. Well, that's another passage where we often focus a lot as far as the rest aspect of it, as far as the Sabbath day, but I'm not sure that we spend so much time on the other part of the verse, and that is, God said, 6 days thou shalt work. So I find that interesting. When God gave the Ten Commandments under the Old Testament, he specifically put in there the part that talks about working. So he does intend for people to work, but you have sometimes people who are unwilling to do that, and sometimes that happens to be something that's tossed into our lap. We obviously don't have the ability to discern the motives of people in the first century when they had some miraculous gifts. Some of that was certainly done, but we have to make a lot of judgment calls, and as I mentioned earlier, sometimes those calls are made on very limited information. You have maybe just a few minutes to evaluate something, and sometimes you get it right, sometimes you get it wrong, and sometimes you just have to say, I don't know. We do know that as we look, you see freeloaders, you see con artists, you see lazy people. Part of the reason I think this is helpful to discuss, anybody seeing more people around town that are asking for help? I'm starting to see more people on some street corners, people with signs, those kinds of things. So as you're walking into a store, this might be something that you're hit up with, or you pass by someone and the thought goes through the head, should I help, should I not help? Ray, did you have a thought? I saw one the other day at Walmart, and this was interesting. I hung around for not as long as I, you know, might have wanted. But there was this lady. She looked like circumstances were difficult. Let me describe it that way. She's standing there, and then a man comes up, well-dressed, or reasonably well-dressed. I mean, it's not like a suit and tie, and was talking on a cell phone and chatting with her, and I thought, they look awful chummy, and they don't really look like they go together. So I couldn't help but maybe if she would wonder, but if she was out there plying the trade, so to speak, and then he brought her some food and was the husband or brother or some family member. It was really unusual to watch. Now, when you start dealing with people, and again, people have different motivations, but I do want to mention some things that haven't been discussed by me here over the years to let you know some of the things that you might be dealing with. What's emotional blackmail? Emotional blackmail. What is that? You ever have someone use emotional blackmail on you?
Especially guilt.
Okay. That would be a good starting point.
Well, there was a lot of people that would, you know, have the sign, need work, you know, to eat and everything. That would be in the area where we lived in Brentwood. But one day, this man always made me so mad that he was there. That was all I could do, not to stop and discuss it with him. But one day then, I come out, and he has his whole family there beside him, begging.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, emotional blackmail, guilt. They try to put some emotional pressure on you somehow, and it takes different forms. Sometimes they might say, well, don't you have enough food to feed your family? That's so nice. I wish I had that. And if you don't have a conscience, you can probably walk away from that. But if you do, if you're trying to live the Christian life and you're thinking about what the Bible says concerning the poor, and you're being squeezed in that way, you have to stop and ask the question, am I being squeezed? Am I being mentally abused? Or is this something that I should really pay some attention to? But there are people who use that kind of thing. Some of the things that you might find. If you're talking to people, you will, in many cases, find exaggerations. One of the things, Stan can attest to this, Ray can attest to this, and Jeff probably could as well. But when you talk to people, they will exaggerate the circumstances. What about your friends? I don't have any friends. Well, that's possible, isn't it? But if you talk to 100 people and all 100 people tell you, I don't have any friends, that's a hard sell for me. And I've gotten to the point with some of the folks that I've said, do you have a cell phone? Well, yes. Could I see it? And I scroll through the contacts. And they've got 40 or 50 contacts. And I've asked them, who are these people? Well, they're not friends. Well, who are they? So you do find that as well. Another thing, and this happened with this guy yesterday, and this to me is one of the most frustrating things. But after I experienced, and you don't find that in Acts chapter 3. Here's a fellow he did have a need. He's a beggar, but he still is, he's on the up and up, so to speak. You find, as you sometimes deal with people, that when you ask questions of them, you don't get straight answers. Now, there are times where you can ask a difficult question and people might beat around the bush a little bit, or they're trying to be sensitive and thoughtful, but you also have evasiveness. You ask a person, where'd you come from? Well, that's pretty simple, isn't it? I was down south, or I was up north, or I was east, I was west, but you get an answer that's 10 paragraphs long. I don't really need that. And you will find oftentimes that as you try to ask questions, they go off. It's like dealing with someone who's from a cult. If you want to have a Bible study with a cult member, you ask a question, and they just take you off in so many different directions, and you think, this is a web, and where do we start trying to untangle things? So if you have someone that begins a conversation with you, you ask a question, and they just go off here, there, and everywhere, you're probably dealing with somebody that either has some mental issues or you're dealing with somebody who is not on the up and up. Another thing that you'll find, and this is also frustrating for me, what's it mean to drop a hint? Anybody ever have somebody drop a hint on them? Not necessarily with benevolence. How do you drop a hint on somebody? What would an example be? Somebody just hints at something.
Oh, my back sure itches.
Yeah. They want a back rub.
Yeah.
What about your dog? Your dog ever hint? Your cat ever hint? Ours does. Teresa has trained our dog to, when it finishes up, gets a biscuit. I don't know that that's the best practice, but anyway, that was her choice. So dog finishes, comes in, and looks at you and whines and bows. Well, that's a pretty good hint that it's biscuit time, okay? So whether it is a person, whether it is an animal, people hint. Do you think if a person is seeking help on a regular basis, they know how to hint?
Yes,
they do. They will hint with their words. They'll hint with their eyes. They'll hint with their actions. They often excel in hinting. And if you're the one that's being hinted at, how do you feel? Yeah, they've said over the years, if a woman's trying to attract a man, the man probably needs 10 hints before, the woman's thinking, well, how many more do I need to give you, or it's a husband-wife situation and the wife is giving the signals and the husband is not getting it, I've got to beat you over the head with the skillet for you to realize what's going on. So sometimes people miss hints, but generally if it is a situation where somebody says, well, been a long time since I've eaten, folks are not usually that dense where they can't understand what's being said, but you will find that too as people make those hints. The Bible, though, as you're dealing with people who may want to perpetuate laziness by the hints and the other activities that we have, it has some things to say that are very specific. Let's go back and look at an Old Testament passage and a New Testament verse. The Old Testament passage is Proverbs 26, 14 and 15. The New Testament reference is 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 10. Who wants to take our Old Testament reference? Proverbs 26, 14 and 15. Proverbs 26, 14 and 15. That'll be Bonnie. Lois, if you want to look at that New Testament reference, that's going to be 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 10. Let's go back to Proverbs 26 and look at 14 and 15.
As the door turns upon his hinges, so does the slothful upon his bed. The slothful
he's using figurative language there. But here's a fellow who is so lazy, so unwilling to work, that he's got food, but what's he willing to do? It's almost like saying, somebody feed me. I don't have enough energy, I don't have enough desire to put my spoon or my fork on the plate or in the dish and feed me. It's like that door, you know, just flops in his bed, doesn't want to get up, doesn't want to do anything. Is that being looked at favorably or unfavorably in the context? It's unfavorable. So God says, implied there, you don't want to be that way. And if people are looking to live in that kind of way, don't support that. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 is even more specific.
Well, even when we were with you, we used to give you this order. If anyone will not work, we will let them eat.
Okay, that's pretty clear. And that was addressed to Christians. And sometimes you'll find Christians who fall into that category, sometimes non-Christians. Now, here's a passage that you might not have looked at in this way, but I think it's worth consideration. Do you remember from Matthew chapter 25? We've got how many virgins that are waiting? 10. How many were prepared? 5. Well, that means how many were unprepared? 5. So you have 5 unprepared ladies. Could they have been prepared? Yes, and we know that because they're off trying to find someone who would sell oil. So it's not that it was unavailable. Unprepared. Time comes where it's time to go. And what happens? Well, you're unprepared. Let's bail you out. No. The door was shut. Now, for us, that sounds really hard. That sounds really cruel. That there was not an exception made. But I think that you can take from that there are some times where we simply need to say no. It would be great if we could eliminate all poverty. It would be great if we could eliminate all the difficulties that people have. But that is not how life works. And once again, we see that from Acts chapter 3. Jesus has gone around and healed all kinds of people. But are there still some people who have not been healed? Are there still some sick folks? Yes! He's been healing people for more than 3 years. The apostles had been healing some people. Yet when we come to Acts chapter 3, there is still this lame man at the temple, and he's been there for a long time. He was sick from his mother's womb. So we've got to realize that today. We don't have the power that the apostles have. We can give what we can give. You see that principle in Acts 3 as well, Acts 3:6. Peter said, silver and gold have I none, but what I do have you, that I give, and we can be in that same boat as well. The fellow yesterday, I didn't happen to have any cash in my wallet, so even if I had wanted to give, there was nothing that I had as far as cash on me to help him in that way. So there are a lot of things that we can do. Maybe sometimes we do something in part. We might not be able to pay a full bill, but we pay a partial bill. Benevolence might take the form of some of the things that we talked about earlier, but it is an important part of our world, and sometimes it is a very difficult thing to decide. And as I said, we're probably going to see more and more of that. As Ray said, California, some parts of the area, as far as our country, you see a lot of that here, maybe a little bit more as things continue to unfold. But try to be compassionate with people, use the principles that we've talked about, and pray for good judgment, and always try to stay safe. Anything you want to add or ask over what we've talked about? Betty?
You know, you were talking earlier that you said you thought you had seen more people around Goshen. I've noticed over the years that around this time of the year you will.
That might be. It might be seasonal. You're very possibly right, because people are thinking, okay, headed into Christmas time and stores are out and people are thinking about various gifts, so that might be. So we'll see whether or not that continues as far as a trend, but that's a good observation. Bonnie, did you have a thought?
Well, there's just a lot of people out there that are so deceitful, though, that I remember somebody approaching me once wanting to know if I would give them some money to put gas in their car. I said, you know what? I'm getting ready to leave. I'll just follow you, go up here to the corner station, and I'll put some gas in your tank for you. They didn't want that. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to give them the cash right then and there. Mm-hmm. So they didn't really want the gas. They wanted that money for something else. You just really have to watch out, people.
Yeah, and that's why I said, that's why I used that emotional blackmail earlier. Because that, you know, kids do that with parents. Well, she got, he got, and people start very early. As far as learning how that works. And you do find this a lot with benevolent cases. You come out and you've got a lot of groceries and somebody says, can you spare $5 for groceries? It's not very difficult to make the mental connection between, I've just spent X number of dollars on groceries, here's the guy who only wants $5, so sure. But they will use that. And if you look at some of the places where they are, you know, they're not only high traffic areas, It might be a department store. It might be Walmart. It might be the gas station. So, you know, there are people who have real needs. In this case, I did talk to the guy. I asked him, I said, are you a vet by chance? And he said, yes, I am. I said, well, the VA has some things. Oh, no, that's a big mess. And, you know, now I kind of start going down that road with him. Now, I understood that he had some needs that day. But still, you begin to offer some options, and then they're shut down. And that is another thing that you will see. That's been one of the things, again, for those who have dealt with benevolent cases. When you start offering options to somebody, it's like food. You've seen a child maybe offered food. Do you want this? No. You want that? No. And you barely get the food halfway pronounced, and the child says no. And it's not that they're really interested in food. It's just they're kind of in the mood where we don't want to listen to anything they had to say. We're not looking for any option that you have to offer because we want this. And unless we're going to get this, we don't want to hear anything else. And sometimes when people need help, then, you know, you need to be willing to look at the options. But sometimes people, it's either my way or the highway. And sometimes it needs to be the highway. Anybody else? Okay, let's take a look at Acts 3. And let's start with verse 11 and read down through verse 12. And as he held Peter and John, he's been healed and they're past that part now. As he held Peter and John, all the people ran together unto them in the porch that is called Solomon's, greatly wondering. And when Peter saw it, he answered unto the people, ye men of Israel, why marvel ye at this man? Or why fasten ye your eyes on us, as though by our own power or godliness we had made him to walk? Picture the situation. This fellow has been healed by Peter and John. And now what's he want to do to these guys? He wants to hold on to them. And that word that is translated held in some versions, I think that's the ASV. Yes, that's the ASV rendering. And he held, he clung to Peter and John. That verb is expressed with the present tense. So this wasn't something I grabbed you and let you go. But this is ongoing action that meant to seize, to grasp, to take hold of, to hold fast, to keep. A couple of definitions for it that are a little more formal. One said to hold fast someone with a hand so that it cannot go away. Now think about that. He's got these guys. I'm not going to let you go. Another way to illustrate that is going to be a couple of verses. Acts 2 verse 24. I'm going to read that in Matthew 18, 28. Somebody want to turn over to Matthew 18, 28? All right, that'll be Gary. Back in Acts 2 verse 24, we have the same word being used there, whom God raised up, having loosed the pangs of death, because it was not possible that he should be holden of it. Now that's the same word. You think about Jesus, he goes into the Hadean realm. What happens in Hades if you go there? Are you held? People aren't going in and out. It's not like you're able to run back and forth. But once you enter into the Hadean realm, you're going to stay there until it's time to be released when the Lord comes back at the end of time. So when this fell in Acts 3, verses 10 through 12, holds on to Peter and John, he's really got a good grip. Let's also see what's said about that word in Acts 18, or Matthew 18, 28.
But the same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants which owed him 100 pence, and he laid hands on him and took him by the throat, saying, pay me what that thou owest.
Thank you. What comes to mind there? Laid hands on him, grabs him by the throat. I've got you. Now, I don't think in Acts 3 the idea of roughness is present, but still you have the idea that this fellow, when he grabs onto Peter and John, he's not going to let him go. Why do you think he might have held on to him like he did?
He was afraid that he would get crippled again.
All right. I think I might wonder that these guys made it possible for me to walk, so at least for a little while, I want to stay close. Any other ideas? I think that's a great suggestion. Why else might he have clung to these guys? What about gratitude? Have you ever seen a child who has received something from someone or been helped by someone? Maybe the child is not afraid that what he's received or she's received is going to be taken away. But they're so grateful, what do they want to do? You are now my best friend. I want to stick with you, I want to be with you, I'm going to abide with you, and so forth. There could have been that. And maybe, too, closeness and fellowship. If you've been able to do this, I want to hang with you guys for a little while and see what else might be associated with you. So very, very interesting that he had that kind of reaction. It could also be, as you look at Acts 3 verse 1, it was a time to pray, so maybe he wanted to share information about his healing with the people who had come to pray. Now, he's there in the company of the apostles, and how many people do we read about? Acts 3, 11 and 12. all the people. So, not sure how many that was, but all the people who were in that area, what do? They run. That's interesting. And where do they go? They want to meet the trio at Solomon's porch. And as the people are coming, what's the reaction in their mind? They are greatly wondering. They're very curious. That word which is translated greatly wondering, it's found only here in the New Testament, and it meant utterly astonished, quite astonished. They were amazed, and we can understand the reason for that. This fella, lame from his mother's womb, never walked. Now he's able to walk. He's able to jump. He's praising God, and it was an attention-getting situation. When you look at Solomon's porch, we're also going to read about this a couple chapters later. As you skip over to Acts chapter 5, verse 12, and by the hands of the apostles were many signs and wonders wrought among the people, and they were all with one accord in Solomon's porch. This was an area, it was at least a partially enclosed area, just like today. If you have a time where the sun is really bad, you might want a place where you've got a little screening so you can get away from the sun. Excuse me. Or if you have an area gathering and you have rain, it's nice to be able to continue the gathering but be out of the rain. And Solomon's porch offered that. Jesus, remember that Good Shepherd discourse back in John chapter 10? If you were to go back and look at that, Jesus delivered the Good Shepherd discourse in this same area. One, I've not been there, but one described the covered area as about 45 feet wide, and it ran the eastern length of the court of the Gentiles. So this was a place, according to history, where schools were held there by the scribes, debates were held, merchants were involved with money changing in this area and so forth. It had been built later, not under Solomon's rule, but under Herod's rule. Don't know exactly why it was designated as Solomon's porch, but that's where it was. Some other things, you have Peter taking the lead. The word translated replied is an important word. You might not see this initially, but it occurs only here in the New Testament. And as you look at it, it would maybe initially seem like there had been some questions asked, but that's not what is conveyed by this word. The idea is that people had seen this, and just like today, seeing something, you have questions raised in the mind. There are some flashing lights up ahead, and you wonder, okay, I see something going on up there. I see the flashing lights. I wonder what's taking place. And that's the idea here. People saw that something was taking place. There had been this healing. They come, and rather than ask any questions, Peter is able to see sort of what's in their minds, maybe the expressions that they had, and now he's ready to do some teaching. He begins, as you look at Acts chapter 3, verse 12, by addressing the people how? He says, ye... All right, ye men of Israel. And he asks a couple of questions. First of all, he says, I want to know why you're doing what? I want to know why you are marveling. At least that's how the ASV translates that. That's an interesting word. In classical Greek, it described the human response to the manifestation of the power of a deity. Here it is expressed with the present tense, and it shows ongoing awe. Can you think of anything that would fall into that category? You're in a state of perpetual awe. It's so magnificent, so unusual, so thrilling. You look at it and you just really don't have words for it. What's like that? All right. It might be scenery, something that you've never seen before, never seen in person. What else?
You're saying it's some sort of structure or landmark that you've not seen before. Something that's very big, bigger than any. I mean, I've never been to the Grand Canyon, but I would kind of think that that would kind of be it.
Okay. I'm thinking, in this case, it might be easier to look at it negatively. Are there some things that you would look at and you just stand there and shake your head? You're thinking, I can't believe it. Unbelievable.
Devastation from hurricanes and tornadoes and flooding.
Yeah.
And
yeah. You've been to an area before and you go back and it's leveled. Maybe you have a million-dollar house. Or a multi-million dollar structure, beautiful skyscraper, everything is landscape, and you come in and it's just a heap of rubble. You know, you're kind of looking at the picture on the phone or on the postcard and you're looking at this and you say, I mean, I'm just absolutely stunned. I can't believe it.
A few months ago, you didn't see this, but you know about it, two semis down in Columbia City. One semi was a car carrier, didn't have any cars on to stop the traffic light. Another semi came right up on top of it.
Yes.
I marveled at that.
Yeah.
I was amazed that that second semi could actually get all the way up on top of that truck.
Yeah. And as I say, things like that that are negative, they oftentimes register with us maybe a little more quickly and stay with us longer. We say, this is what I saw. It's generally a little more difficult to come up with something positive that's so amazing that stuns us. But this was. The world is like that a little bit. Somebody says, I was cured of AIDS, I was this sick and all ready to die. So we're sort of amazed by that kind of thing. But negative is probably an easier way to look at it. All right, then Peter asks something else. He says, why are you doing what? When it comes to John and I, why are you looking at us? That's expressed with the present tense, and it's also a word which describes that intense looking. Why are you not just looking at us? Why are you looking at us so earnestly? Why are you looking at us so intently? Why are you so focused on it? Now, to me, that's an interesting point for not only that reason, but this. What's sometimes said about Peter? He was the first pope. If that were true, I would expect the text to say, why are you looking so intently at not us, but at me? But that's not what Peter said. He said us, both John and I. And then Peter goes on to, as you look at this information, goes on to tell the people about the healed man. He said, the healed man is not walking, he's not doing what he's doing because of who? Yeah, because of them, us, me. It's not me, it's not John, it's not us combined. And he said, don't think it is by our power. King James translation, we use the word holiness instead of godliness. But don't think it's by our power. Don't think it is by our godliness. Don't think that this is due to our abilities. Peter, as you look down a few verses, verse 16 said the healing was done by Jesus Christ, the one that you fellows didn't want, the fellow that you wanted to be crucified and a murderer offered in place of him. Now, quick point there. When you think about people, would you say that more often than not, people are inclined to honor and glorify other people or honor and glorify God? I think people. And I'm not quite sure why, but that's how it works.
Maybe because they can see and touch them.
I guess, or maybe they feel like there's some debt that they need to repay. But when you look at the apostles, the attention was shifted away from them and to God. Honor God. We are nothing but a servant. We are a tool. God is the one who needs to be honored. But when you look at a lot of the denominational ministries in today's world, what do you find? It's the guy's name that's splashed up there. It's about me. It's about us. And God says, it's not about you, regardless of who you are. The apostles exemplify that very, very well. When you start looking at what we have here, you have, I think, a good introduction to miracles that are found in the book of Acts. The book of Acts is a book which is filled with miracles. Oftentimes, we read about health miracles. Remember back in Mark chapter 16, Jesus said, I want you to go and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. Mark 16, verse 16. And then he said, these signs shall follow them. Those signs, many of them are mentioned in the book of Acts, and some of those were health miracles. We have Peter, as you look ahead a little bit, same fellow that we have here in Acts chapter 3. Acts chapter 5, verses 15 and 16, he's healing a lot of people again. Acts 5:15 says, insomuch that they even carried out the sick into the streets and laid them on beds and couches, that as Peter came by, at least his shadow might overshadow some of them. And there also came together the multitudes from the cities round about Jerusalem, bringing sick folk and them that were vexed with unclean spirits. And they were healed, how many? All, everyone. Now that sounds a little bit like Jesus, doesn't it? He goes out, he starts healing. People hear about what's taking place, and they start coming in from surrounding areas, and Jesus heals everyone. Peter, the other apostles, they are continuing that ministry as we look at the book of Acts. Then you begin to find some other things. There's a fellow by the name of Ananias. He's been sick for 8 years, Acts 9, 32 to 35. He's healed. Then you have some healings by some non-apostles a little later. They had received the gift of the Holy Spirit. So as you head into Acts chapter 8, you find Philip and the miracles he was performing in the area of Samaria. And then as you move a little more deeply into the book of Acts, you begin to read about Paul. Paul also was involved in several miracles. Not all of them, though, were positive. Remember that fella in Acts chapter 13? That's an easy way to remember it. People sometimes think of 13 as a bad number. What happens in Acts chapter 13? There is the fella who is trying to prohibit the gospel from being taught. And what's Paul do to him for a season? Strikes him blind. So Acts chapter 13, here's your blind miracle. That's an easy way to remember that. Paul gets to Iconium. He performs some signs and wonders there. Acts 14, verse 3. Acts 14, 8 to 10. We talked about that last time in our previous class. There's that fella crippled from birth. And in many respects, he's like the guy in Acts chapter 3. Acts chapter 16, he frees a girl from demon possession. We've got some special miracles at Ephesus, Acts 19, 11, and 12. Acts 20, he raises the dead. And then the book of Acts, Acts chapter 28, verses 8 and 9, Paul is on an island. And as he's on that island, last chapter of Acts, the health miracles continue. So you have early in the book, all the way through the last chapter, information about various miracles. Anything that you want to add or ask? Well, 3 minutes left, and Acts 3, 13 to 15. So that's not a good place to break it. Nobody? Want to go back and talk about benevolence for just a minute? Anybody had any contact with somebody in the area lately? Bruce and Karen Harbuck are in class today, so it's good to have you. We were just talking about benevolence as far as, and one suggestion was that maybe because it's towards the end of the year, we're seeing a few more people around town. But in your area, are you seeing more people holding out signs and looking for help, or has it been pretty much steady?
Contact through calls. We get a lot of calls.
Okay. And that seems to have been increasing over the last 6 months or year?
Year.
Okay. So it is a constant challenge because there are a lot of people out there looking for a lot of different forms of help. So we do want to try to look at people as we learn from Acts chapter 3 and process those requests. But also, remember Jesus' words, be wise as serpents, innocent as doves. So as you interact with people, do try to use common sense, because there are some individuals out there who don't have the best intentions and sometimes can be dangerous. Karen? Yeah, and there are some times where the benefit of the doubt. Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians 13. But there have also been times where congregations just didn't use any real discretion there, and money has been used to buy probably lottery tickets. I know for sure that money has been used to fund drinking. It's been used sometimes to fund fornication. People have decided, we've got the room, so we're now going to go ahead and go in there and engage in fornication. Been used to buy illegal drugs. So we can't figure out all those cases in advance, but sometimes with some questions, we can identify some people who are the cons and the scammers and weed those out. But there are going to be some other people where God's going to have to make that decision in the end. All right, Lord willing, we'll look at Acts chapter 3, 13 through 15 next Sunday. Thank you very much.